This is the Car Dealer Podcast driven by CarGurus. You want the best return for your advertising budgets, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and tell them we sent you.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favourite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me this week, live from a shepherd's hut in the Cotswolds, it's James Batchelor. Batch, what are you doing in David Cameron's shed?
Well, I'd like to say I'm here on holiday. I'm not. I'm here just freeloading from a manufacturer, basically. I'm here to drive a nice car, which I will be doing very shortly after this podcast. It's sitting outside waiting for me. But I've told the manufacturer that I will not drive it because I need to do the podcast, which is way more important, obviously.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What is the vehicle in question?
It's the new Polestar 2, which...
Looks a lot like the old Polestar 2.
It does look a bit. All the I'm just writing my copy just before we're doing the podcast. All the changes are underneath. Cool. So it's been quite a busy week. Actually, I was in Spain earlier in the week driving some electric Peugeots as well. And that's the thing these days, isn't it? Everything's electric.
Yes, I think that was evidenced by our Car Dealer Power Cars of the Year, which obviously will come on to, but yes, I just for the last 2 years they've all been, well, no, last year there was one petrol one, wasn't there?
But as much as it's lovely being in the Cotswolds, we know the reason why I'm on this podcast, because, you know, I've got the raw deal as per usual, haven't I, because our esteemed founder is in California, I think, isn't he, driving the new Rolls Royce?
Yes, so, Napa Valley.
I always just get parachuted in, don't I? I just, you know.
You're always the second choice, Batch.
I'm not offended, but anyway.
Well, anyway, how's your week been apart from that? Obviously, we've had other things going on. How's your week in news been?
Well, it has, I mean, I say busy. I've barely been doing anything. I've just been monitoring what we've been doing. But of course, the big thing for us this week is Car Dealer Power, isn't it? Which... I'm sure we will move on to in a minute, but Car Dealer Power has been the big thing this week. And it's just nice, isn't it? It's nice sort of celebrating the best in our industry. So yeah, it's been a very full on week. Yeah.
Yes. And obviously I'm sure you're very tired from co-hosting that with James.
Yes.
So, yes. Well, I'll move us on to intro our guests. This week, our guest joins us from another podcast, actually. It's Simon Bokett from Simco Training. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you very much there. And I tell you what, we've got people in California, people in the Cotswolds. I'm in Cheshire there, all these flash places as well, but Cheshire doesn't seem as flash as Batch and James at the moment.
I don't know. I think Cheshire's quite flash, isn't it?
Well, it's nice to be in Cheshire at the moment. Most of the time, I'm on the road somewhere in a Premier Inn somewhere or some Holiday Inn somewhere around the world.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, you have our pity.
I'm trying to get the sob vote here.
Obviously. Yes.
Well, just to get us moving, do you want to tell us a little bit about Simco and, you know, the history and how you started?
Well, first I've got to say thank you for calling me Simon, because in the industry, so many people know me as Skippy. And if you know why they call me Skippy, that's going to age you, because I grew up in the motor trade in Australia, started 17 years old, one of these cadet salespeople. You know the one, guys, 12 months of making the teas and the coffees and started washing cars for a living, doing all the, then I did the backpacking stuff that we Aussies have to do. And 95, I left, come halfway around the world. And in the motor trade, nicknames get banded around. And I'll get banded the name Skippy. Now, if you're under 25, you're going to have to ask your managers why they call me Skippy. But years ago, Skippy the Bush Kangaroo, I got branded that name, and I'm sort of stuck with it. So thank you for calling me Simon. I really appreciate it. I don't normally hear that.
We can switch to Skippy if that's easier.
It doesn't matter. I'm used to both now. I'm no longer offended by it. It's a long time ago.
I remember that program very, very well.
That ages you, Batch. That ages you.
Yeah, it does a bit, really. Do you remember that, John?
I do. I remember the theme tune. I can't remember what actually happened in the program, apart from the big kangaroo. Oh,
John, you'll remember when you say, "What's that, Skippy? You need 30 foot of rope. The man's stuck down the well. All right, let me go." It was a cross between Neighbours, Home and Away, Lassie, and maybe Dr. Doolittle, but really cheesy and cheap.
Yes.
So it was, yes, I got branded that there. So
anyway. What sort of brought you to the UK? It's quite a distance to travel.
Yeah, John, just a typical backpacking thing that we Aussies do. When you can record our history on a camcorder, some of the Aussies travel halfway around the world to look for some culture. But I found myself in a Nissan dealership in High Wycombe, part of some culture there. Davenport,
yes.
Vernon, for some of the people remember that, taken over by Evans Halshaw then, I believe. And I met my wife there, and she was the business manager. I don't know if I can say I got stuck here. I'll be in trouble if she ever hears this, but that's why I'm this part of the world. But, you know, John, I've been here so long now, I've even bred two English people. So I'm well and truly part of the culture now.
Integrated, lovely.
Integrated, that's a better word. I like that.
So tell us a bit more about Simcoe then. When did you kickstart the business?
Yeah, so Simcoe Training, we run a sales training company since 2000. And we like to call ourselves the training for the real world guys. And getting into training, it was by accident. I was a sales manager in that Nissan dealership in High Wycombe. Only ever been a general sales manager, not been a head of business or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But we had a guy from a training company turn up to do some training for our salespeople on site. And I thought, hey, that's great. On-site training and coaching, it's better than sending people to Maple Cross and away for a day or two. I said to this guy, listen, before you start, can you talk me through your sales process? Because I want to make sure it's on the same page of what we're talking about here. And bless him, John, this guy said, yeah, I can do that for you. First, it's meet and greet, and then it's qualification. And then, oh, I always forget this one. He started doing a nervous dive into his briefcase, trying to find the process. And as you can imagine, alarm bells went off my head. And I said, hey, Mr. Trainer, when's the last time you actually sold a car in the real world? Which I thought was a fair question. And bless him, this guy said, well, I've had placement. And I'd never heard this phrase placement. Now, bear in mind, my motor trade experience was in Australia. So maybe placement was like a business manager's position, some sort of handover specialist. But bless him, it wasn't any of that. When he left university, he was placed in a dealership for 2 months to learn how the process would work. And guys, I've got to tell you, I was a young, cocky sales manager back then, and I would change my way today, okay? I was very, very young there. And I was worried about what he's going to teach my guys. So it's all right, take me through the training. And I can't not the content of what I was going to teach my guys. But I was worried about him. And he was in a little glass office off the side of our showroom. You know, dealerships have glass offices, right? It was actually the business manager's office. He's in there doing some training with one of my guys. I remember this, a guy called Chris Hewlett, and a telephone inquiry came through. So I said to the trainer, hey, Mr. Trainer, would you do me a favor? Instead of telling my salesperson how to do it, why don't you show him? And bless him, I put him on the spot, and I feel guilty now, but at the time, you know what? You could almost see it running down the back of his legs. he threw in his lovely little consultant face saver, and he said, oh, what I prefer to do is let your salesperson take the call, and then I can critique him. Guys, I changed the way I did this now, but I was worried about the customer at the end of the call. I said, take the call to my salesperson. I pulled the trainer back from office. He said, hey, Mr. Trainer, would you do me a favor? He said, yeah, certainly. What's that? Get on your bike. Now, I'll be brutally honest with you, Batch. They're not the words I use word for word. I use some stronger words, which I changed today because I'm more mature-ish. But I often say I'd do the same thing again today, but in a nicer way. Because if anyone's going to teach someone how to sell, I'd ask them when's the last time they did it. And that's how I got into training. Nissan was not happy with me. I remember I had to phone up to this man's boss and apologize for kicking him out of the business. And he said the fateful words. He said, why'd you kick him out of the business? I said, well, he can't do it. He said, you reckon you could do a better job? I said, standing on my head. I said, how? So I'd show people how to do it, not tell them. And that's how the boss said, hey, why don't you come along and have a chat and see what we could do? And that's how I got into training. So there's a long old story there, but it's part of the philosophy that we have in Simcoe Training to this day. We're more of a coaching company. Last time I sold a car, super easy for me, it was last week. Now, Batch, I'd love to tell you it was I sold the car for all the value-added products and they bought everything and it was great. Let me tell you, it was an island. It wasn't a hard car to deal at all. The customer's calling from a long way away, okay? The further away on a used car, everyone listening to this podcast knows that wasn't a hard deal. But I still get involved. All our trainers, we're a small company, there's only six of us there. Six trainers out there, so six in total, I should say. And so we're a small company, but we employ people who can do it. So we're more of a coaching company. We spend so much of our time showing people how to do it, not just talking about it. So that's a nutshell. That's Simcoe Training. That's who we are.
Very interesting. Yeah, a path you've had there. Sorry, Batch, I've interrupted.
No, I was just going to say a sale is a sale. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter what it is. If you've sold something to a customer, it doesn't matter what the process was, it's still a sale at the end of the day, isn't it? So
yeah, I'll go say that's interesting you talk about that process, and it's the industry at the moment. We've been through a situation without offending any listeners here, where over the last 2-3 years you didn't have to be a genius to sell a car. I mean, because of limited supply, COVID times, when we opened up, we know the whole sales process was, hey, is that car available? Yeah, it is available. Do you want it? If not, I've got four other people who want it. Okay. You had so many salespeople who, dare I say, it was low-hanging fruit. I had one guy on our training course. I got to tell you, Batch, he was God's gift to salespeople. He knew everything, didn't need training. And as a trainer, we deal with that all the time. But I asked him, hey, when did you start in the industry? He'd only been selling used BMWs for 18 months. I thought, goodness me, he doesn't know the real world. Mm. But I tell you, it's changing now. We've got to get back to slowing that process down. We've got to get back to sell the car before we sell the deal. And we always say there's three sales in any sale. You got to sell yourself first, the product second, and then the numbers, the deal. Okay, they're the three sales. If you're buying a suit, John, okay, we go in to buy a suit and the suits person said, hold on, it's close to closing time. You better come back next week. We'd find another suit retailer. So we've got to sell ourselves first. Then we've got to sell the product. If they only had pink and purple polka dotted suits, Batchel, and they're all just an extra, extra large, then I better throw that in. Would it matter how cheap they are? No, you've got to sell yourselves first, the product second. But the reality is, post-COVID times, salespeople didn't have to sell themselves first, the product second. All they had to do is go into the, yeah, the car's available, do you want it? If not, there's four other people. We've now got to get back into slowing the process down. We've got to get back into selling ourselves, not just the salesperson, selling the dealer group you're working with. We're family owned, okay? We're one of the largest dealer groups in the region, in the country. We've got to get back to selling. This car's been in our workshop, and one of our senior technicians has checked 145 points on the car. That means it's an approved use, Volvo, Nissan, whatever it is, okay? We got to get back to selling ourselves first, then get back to selling the product, slow it down, and not just go into the deal, the deal, the deal. So that's the biggest change that we're seeing day in, day out. And our listeners, you're seeing that at the moment as well.
Basics. Well, as one manufacturer MD told me this week, things have really gone back to how they were.
Yes.
The last 3 years, you're absolutely right. You know, there was limited supply. You know, if you didn't want the car, there are four other people who want it. Now, I mean, you know, some manufacturers, they've got supply. They've got too much supply, actually. Yep. So we're sort of going back to those pre-COVID days, actually. And the art of the sale is coming back into force, because not only is there good supply, but there's also the cost of living crisis, and people can't actually, potentially they might not be able to afford the monthly payments on cars. So
it's going back to a push market. And James, what we're seeing at the sharp end all the time, we get so many customers, I'm going to use this word, addicted they're paying $400 a month. And their Dicta's paying $400 a month, and they've got their Velar that they got because it was a great deal at the time. Okay, but that was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, the same car, it's easily going to be $850, $900 a month. Okay, because of interest rates, we know have only gone one way. What is last 12 months? Is it 9 times now it's gone up? We know that the customers trade in prices. That's starting to come down now after going up for however many months in a row. The gap is getting bigger, and that's the challenge we've got, getting that customer addicted to paying $400 or $500 a month. And now it's easily going to be $700, $800, and getting salespeople to talk about how to overcome that gap. That's the challenge out there. Yeah.
One of my questions was, since 2000, quite a lot has changed, to put it lightly, in the automotive industry. But as you say, yes, even in the last 4 years, isn't it? A lot has changed. What do you see coming down the tracks? Things like agency sales, for example. How do you train to deal with the changes that brings?
Yeah, it's such a hot topic on our podcast. And sorry to talk about our podcast in the middle of yours, guys, but in the selling on the there's a shameless plug. But in the selling the on in the I won't go through the whole lot. The biggest episodes is James Vortman. Okay, here's the guy that's almost central to the court case in Australia where the Mercedes dealers. When have you ever heard that 90% of the dealerships are taking their manufacturer to court with the agency model? Something like 11,000 people download that podcast view, because there's so many investors in this country and Ireland are nervous. I don't know if that's the right word, but they want to know how to prepare themselves for agency. And John, agency's coming. I don't think that we're going to put our heads in the sand. Or Dale White, we interviewed him, and he's definitely anti-agency, and he's put his...
To put it lightly, yes.
Oh, yes. Okay, but I've got to say it's a tide which is happening. Okay, we know that Mercedes is done. JLR said they're not going to do it, but now it's going to be 2024. They're going to go ahead and do it. Volkswagen, I mean, it's a tide that's happening. I personally don't think agency... is the devil that some people think. I think it's how it's been implemented in some of the countries is the issue there. But that's going to affect the market in a big way, John. I think that's one of the biggest things that's going to affect us going forward, that we need to have a look at how we retail change. You've got these disruptors. Are they disruptors anymore when you've got the Cazoos of the world? Okay. You've got... Cavena in America, what was it, 97% they've lost their market share. It was going to be, we're all going to have this magic button batch on our website. And the magic button was the customers click the button and buy a car themselves. I think we're realizing there's a place for that and people will do that.
But not as many as we perhaps thought.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's how many of those people there still want to then come and touch and feel and drive the car. I think there's definitely a place for that. But the change, John, it's a huge question. I've never seen so much change. Started when 17, I'm 49 now, so that is too many years in the motor trade. But the last 4 years, none of us have seen changes like this. But normality, whatever that is coming back. I think... The agency is going to be a big change there on that one. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Certainly will. Well, I will move us on to chatting about our stories, as I'm sure we'll have much to talk about as we go through. So if you haven't listened before, Batch and I have chosen our favourite stories from the car dealer website this week. We don't know what each other has chosen, and we're going to have a chat about each story as we go through. At the end, Simon gets to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. If you want to play along, you can tweet at Car Dealer Mag and let us know if you think we have missed anything. I wasn't here last week and neither was Batch, but James was the winner. And so reluctantly, I'm going to hand that over to Batch to go first.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sort of starting with a bit of trepidation because there are two pigeons on the roof of this shepherd's hut. I don't know if you can hear them.
It's not what I thought you were going to say there.
They're getting a bit fruity with each other. And so I'm just hope you can't hear anything. It's rather loud here. But anyway, moving on.
Moving on, Bill Oddie. What's your first story?
I know I've already hinted at it already. We've got to start off with car dealer power, because hopefully our listeners will allow us a bit of
self-promotion.
We've got to bask in our sort of in our hard work, because car dealer power is a huge undertaking every single year. But it's worth it, because it's hugely important, and I'm sure everybody knows what car dealer power is. But for those who don't, it's an enormous survey which we get our readers, car dealers across the country, to fill out, and they name the best suppliers they do business with. But they also tell us what the manufacturers are like to work with as well. And there were 17 different supplier categories this year. We had some new categories as well, which was interesting to put together and hear the feedback from those. And there were 23 car makers which were named and shamed. Toyota won. They rose, I think it was 8 places this year. I think it was 7 or 8 places this year. They've put Kia down into second place. And it was just great. It was great talking to Mark Rowden at Toyota. And it really means a huge amount to them, this. Mm. You know, it's you know, we've got car dealer power, and then there's the NFDA survey. And these are the two surveys which mm-hmm. manufacturers really do listen to, and they really do want to do well at. And at the other end of the spectrum, we had Jaguar, which have come last. And for mm-hmm. people who are listening to this, please do go and have a look on the website. Do watch the video as well. And there's just some really interesting takeaways from it. And it's always quite fun to put together, isn't it, John?
It is fun and time consuming. But
yes.
I got to say, from the clients we're working with, those two, the first place and last place, are probably well deserved, actually, from what I hear with our clients out there. Toyota has just done great stuff. Definitely well deserved there. And JLR, again, we probably understand why they're down there with everything that's happened there.
Yeah. And the thing with Jaguar in particular, of course, you know, Land Rover, despite all the problems at JLR, they're still doing fairly well. Whereas with Jaguar, obviously, this survey is just another sign that the dealers are, yes, there is a little bit more direction being given by JLR in terms of the future of the two brands. Well, sorry, House of Brands, as I should say.
Sorry, Batch, forgive my ignorance. Did you separate Jaguar from Land Rover in the survey?
We did, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But it's just a sign of the frustration that dealers aren't selling many Jaguars at the moment. And hopefully things will improve over the next couple of years or so. But I just think we're really seeing the frustration that dealers are going through. And it was borne out in the survey, really. Mm-hmm.
Because there's multiple frustrations with Jaguar at the minute, isn't there? There's all this reimagined. I don't want to say nonsense, but there's all this reimagined strategy going on. But of course, it's also the fact that, as we've talked about before, they've invested huge amounts in these dual brand dealerships, only to have effectively the Jaguar bit pulled out of it, aren't they? I mean, I was flicking through the results. We quizzed dealers on their manufacturer's performance in 13 areas, don't we? One of them is manufacturer requirements, i.e. what do they want you to do? Toyota got at top of this particular category, 90 out of 100. Jaguar, 30 out of 100. So clearly that is borne out in the results, isn't it? They're quite frustrated with being told, you have to do this. This is what you have to turn your showroom into. Now this is what you have to wear. Go and buy blue suits and white trainers and all this stuff. And to what actual end? They're not selling any cars, really, are they, fundamentally? Because there's half of them are missing from the lineup in a way, and no new ones on the way. So yes, not good news for Jaguar.
Interesting seeing where Jaguar's going to go with the all electric lineup coming forward. When they're talking about the price, they're definitely going in a premium way there. So I think they're going to go closer towards the Aston Martin. I mean, speaking to some of our clients about what's coming through, hopefully for the staff working in those Jaguar businesses, there's some light at the end of the tunnel there on some of the stuff coming through. It's definitely changing the position of that brand. I think that's what they're really aiming for. Be interesting to see how that plays out.
Absolutely. And then the other thing I'm going to shoehorn in is, of our three worst performing brands, Citroen sandwiched between Jaguar and Land Rover, which I always found a bit surprising. But then Perhaps it's not, because there's so much Stellantis restructuring going on at the minute. We've had these headlines about earlier in the year, cars stuck in various ports, unable to be collected by dealers, and you know, dealers being asked to register them before they've arrived at dealerships and have effectively customers start paying for them before they've received them. So all is not well in Stellantis land, I suspect. But I that's what I can't understand, because everything else to do with Citroën seems quite reasonable. You know, they've got a good lineup of cars at the minute, haven't they? Probably the best they've had for some time. I remember our stories on Car Dealer a few years ago of Citroën dealers not very happy, and Batch having to defend the story to various people from Citroën head office phoning us. But back then it was a bit of a sorry situation, wasn't it? It was just a discount manufacturer, really.
But I think at the moment, and it's not just Citroën, but it's just this. It's very easy to convince the wider public at large that the whole creation of Stellantis has been a wonderful success, and in many ways it has. But the biggest problem with it is that it's the fusion of two very different companies. And I just think there are some teething problems there. And, it's not an easy thing to fix. You know, you've got the might of PSA with FCA and coming together. And I just think there are some tension points there, really. So, again, it's one which... Hopefully, you know, there are some very, very talented, you don't need me to say there's some very talented people working with that organization, particularly in the UK. And yeah. I'm sure they will get it sorted. But I still think there are some teething problems in the early days of this massive, massive car maker.
Yeah, I like the idea that, again, people like James Weston, a fan of the show, and James is a huge advocate of James. I think he's a great guy, and he's going more into the manufacturer, I believe, working on the used car side of it. So hopefully they're getting more perspective of what the dealers need for people like that working with Stellantis. So it'd be interesting to see that.
Okay.
Well, move it on. I am going to pick a Stellantis-related story just to... segue there. So this is news from Fiat. I don't know why I got very excited when I said Fiat there, but it's news from Fiat. And it's announced that it will no longer sell grey cars. So you cannot have grey if you want to order a Fiat. This is not, on the face of it, a particularly interesting story, but I thought it was a very clever bit of PR that Fiat have stuck out. In fact, involving dunking the is it the managing director or the, no, it's the chief executive officer of Fiat, sticking him in a Fiat 600, which is the new crossover, and dunking him and the car into a giant vat of orange paint in the middle of an Italian village.
It was very Noel's house party, that, wasn't it? It was.
Well, I did think to myself when I was watching it, he is very confident in the build quality of this particular 600, isn't he?
Bravest man in the world.
Fill with paint and drown it. But yes, I thought it was basically they've said they have had enough of grey, boring cars, because I'm going to say there are certain manufacturers, when you go on to the configurator, there are 20 shades of grey and no actual colours that you can pick for your car.
Not 50 shades of grey. It's just
20. No, sadly, due to copyright related reasons, they don't make it to that number. yes, so Fiat have had enough of this, apparently, and they've said no more grey. They still have black and white, which are effectively shades of grey, aren't they? But anyway.
Well, I also had this story down on my list because I wanted to talk about it as well. And I was struck by it as well. And so much so, I think the irony of all of this, because I thought it'd be an instant kind of thing. You know, if they put this press release out, then suddenly, you know, the colour palettes of all of their models, I say all of their models, the small handful of them, was suddenly changed. But I went onto the configurator and selected the Fiat Stilo. And
Stilo? What year?
Not Stilo, sorry. The Tipo, sorry. That in itself shows what an irrelevant car it is, isn't it? The Fiat Tipo, sorry. Just the basic trim level, not the cross version. The standard hatchback. You can only get it in three colours in the UK. And... Do you want to sort of guess what those colours are?
Go on.
grey, and a very, very dark green, which almost looks black. So, I mean, even Fiat can't even time their press release at the correct time of updating their configurator. So that made me sort of chortle a little bit this week.
Well, perhaps I'll rephrase. It wasn't a clever PR stunt. I thought it was clever, and it was no cost, I thought, just to suddenly bin off some paint colours.
I'll give you that, John. It's no cost, but I often think, and bear in mind, I'm just the car salesperson. Okay, I started washing cars for a living, and these marketing people are a lot smarter than me, but I just think of Mrs. Casey sitting at home and saying, oh, I think I'm going to go for a Fiat now, simply because that bit of free PR, maybe. So, yeah.
But as we all know, grey, the reason why people choose grey, because they know it's the resale value. And it's all well and good saying, well, we're going to produce all of our cars in pink and orange and duck egg blue. It sounds lovely, doesn't it? But in 5 years' time, 3 years' time, when the dealers are trying to have to shift these cars, it might not be such a rosy thing to be talking about.
No, I suppose Fiat probably can get away with it because everything that they, well, apart from the Tipo, everything that they sell is quite fun and bouncy and whatever. This isn't very new for them, actually, when you think about it, is it? Because a few years ago, I remember they had those Colour Therapy 500s, which I thought was an utterly stupid name, but it was sort of like a mustardy yellow 70s colour, wasn't it? And I can't remember what else there was, but they had, when the Twin Air came out, they had that duck egg blue, as you say. So it's not very new to them. I think those sorts of things will always be fine. I think what you couldn't do is take, I'm going to say, the Range Rover Velar, which is the configurator at the minute. There are literally about 10 shades of grey and one blue, I think, or something like that. Mm. I don't think you could apply the same logic to that, could you?
No. But yes, that took my eye as well. But yes, I couldn't help but laugh when they're still producing a car, which you can only get in three very dull colours.
Well, if it's any consolation, I don't think anyone's ordering a Tipo.
Stilo, Tipo.
Whatever it is. Uno.
Uno.
Yeah.
Uno.
Is this where you get the complaints now from the OEM? Is this where they come in now? Yes.
Possibly. I mean, you're assuming that they're listening. It's okay. A very slim chance.
They're coming up with marketing campaigns. That's.
We'll be right back. You want the best return from your advertising budget, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market, high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and tell them we sent you. Now, let's get back to the quiz.
Yeah. Over to James Batchelor.
Well, talking about sort of manufacturers sort of getting into hot water, Hyundai and Toyota have sort of felt the wrath of the ASA, the Advertising Standards Authority, this week, because they've been producing some adverts which apparently are misleading. So both Hyundai and Toyota have produced adverts which have sort of been talking about the charging claims of their models, and the ASA and like a handful of people have got really quite angry about this, and I just find it quite strange, really. Particularly with Hyundai, so they have been advertising the IONIQ 5, and they're saying that you can, if you find the correct charger, an ultra fast charger, a 350 kilowatt one, you can charge the IONIQ 5 from 10 to 80% in 18 minutes. But the ASA have got involved and they've banned this advert because they're saying that Hyundai are not making it clear that there are very few of these chargers around the UK. And they're selling this car on the basis of you can recharge it very, very quickly, but for the vast majority of people in the UK, they won't be able to do this because there simply aren't enough chargers. And I understand the ASA have got to step in occasionally and on the side of the consumer and say, look, because let's face it, brands, if they can skew the truth, they will. But I do think in this particular case, and Toyota have also fallen foul of this in a slightly different way, but in a largely speaking for the same reasons. I think I don't get why manufacturers are getting told off about this when it's not their fault that there aren't enough of these chargers in the UK. They are purely quoting figures that their cars can do. It's not their fault that there's only a handful of these 350 kilowatt chargers in the UK. I think it's a bit unfair that they're getting wrapped on the wrists for this.
I know what you mean on that front. I mean, I do slightly disagree in that if there were no chargers available, you know, if Porsche came out tomorrow with a new Taycan and said it can charge with a 500 kilowatt charger in 5 minutes or something, which don't exist in the country, then that is not really a fair thing to say, is it? Yeah. However, yeah, you're right. There's quite a few of these chargers dotted around the country, 350 kilowatt ones, aren't there? All the Ionity ones, which have been up in car parks in various places for years now, the Ionity ones in various motorway services. If those can charge it at that rate, I think that's acceptable. What I find really frustrating, and as a previous electric car driver with a Mazda MX-30 for a year, the thing I found really frustrating I didn't consider myself a novice to the world of EVs, but it's the level of complication in terms of the varying factors that mean you can't charge at the advertised rate. Yeah. And that is really frustrating. So Mazda, in the same way as Hyundai here, would say that the MX-30 can charge in 45 minutes or something from 0 to 80%. Okay, well, that is the case if the battery is nice and hot and you've been driving it up and down the motorways for however long, it's not too cold outside, all these other various factors come into it. If you start your car up tomorrow, if it's been sat outside, sat on 20%, and you take it to your local rapid charger, it won't charge at anywhere near that speed, which is very frustrating if you have budgeted in your day at 45 minutes to charge it up and it actually takes an hour and a half. That is a real frustration, and that could be the reason that you miss your meeting that you're going to or whatever. So I do think there needs to be something. There needs to be some way of sort of highlighting these problems in advertising. And I don't think that's a reasonable thing to say. How you do it is a different matter entirely.
Yeah, no, I entirely agree with you. But I think one of the biggest frustrations is not the all the factors that limit a particular car being able to charge at a particular speed. What annoys me as a user of electric car charging points occasionally is the actual charging point, is the advertised speed of the charging point. I mean, we've all used charging points that say
bigger one, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. That say that, look, they can charge up 150 kilowatts, but the actual charging speed you're getting could be 85. I mean, to me, that's the bigger problem.
Whether it's the car or the charge point that's causing that problem. It's that there's an opaqueness to it, isn't it? Is it my
car is.
That isn't charging quickly, or is it this charger?
Yeah. I suppose we're just in this very tricky phase at the moment where a lot of people are being tempted to go into electric cars, and they're being forced by their company or what have you. And you know, there's just a bit of disconnect between the cars we're actually getting and the infrastructure that we've actually got. Of course, all of this stuff is going to improve in the future, but I think it's a bit unfair. You know, bodies like the ASA are sort of coming hard down on the manufacturers when the manufacturers I don't think are doing anything wrong. Personally,
in the same way that if you said you know, if they were advertising WLTP miles per gallon,
yes,
that's not what you're going to get in the real world, but it is at least a standardized test.
It kind of reminds me of that. If we go back, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, broadband speeds, what they're advertising, what you actually get, there was a huge thing there. And I think this is going to be, as the EV revolution, for want of a better word, happens, I think people are going to be more and more educated about actually, when Ryanair advertised that you can go to Paris from 29 euros or 29 pounds, you know, it's nowhere near Paris and it's going to be like 400. So I think people get educated on that. I agree with that. It's they're not lying, are they? They can actually charge it in that time there. The infrastructure, as every expert on this podcast has been saying, it just needs to get improving a lot. If we're going to meet these targets, we need to get to.
My final thing on this that I will say is what the ASA haven't picked up looking at this story and looking at the advert in itself that we've embedded is they haven't picked up that the image that Hyundai have used to demonstrate it charging in 18 minutes on a rapid charger is plugged into a slow charger. So you can have that one for free, the ASA. I think that's a more than acceptable thing to ban it on.
That one there is, yes.
Yes, there we go. Right. Shall I move us away from electric cars?
Yes.
Yeah.
On to electric. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to talk about car theft, or more specifically, a car theft, which is the theft of a car from the Wheeler Dealers series, which was still in production. So everyone knows Wheeler Dealers, obviously. Mike Brewer and Mark Priestley, Elvis. I've been doing up various cars. They've got to the last one of their series, which was quite appropriately a Ford Fiesta, because of course the Fiesta's being killed off. So they've got a lovely Mark 1 1300S Fiesta, which was not a spec I knew existed, but it looks very nice, very jazzy. And unfortunately, on the day before they were due to do their sort of grand reveal of the car, as they do in the series, at a car meet for Fiesta owners, it was stolen from a car park in West Yorkshire. So quite sad. It was in a sort of covered trailer. It's all been stolen. So now they're appealing for help to try and find this particular Fiesta. You would hope, given that it's quite a unique car, that this is not going to surface somewhere very easily, in terms of no one's going to try and flog it, because it's quite a hot car, shall we say, now, in terms of attention on it. What you hope is that it's not going to be torn apart for parts, which is of course the other option. So fingers crossed, with a bit of social media help, it will reappear, because there was a few weeks ago or a few months ago a similar thing of a nurse somewhere, I can't remember where she was, somewhere in West Yorkshire or something, had her Mini Clubman 1970s one stolen. And there was an enormous appeal all over social media to try and track it down. People spotted it on the motorway being towed somewhere. And eventually it was found somewhere in Leicestershire. So you like to think there might be a happy ending to this eventually.
And John, did they find the person who took it? Because they're the people that really need
it. I don't think they did.
What a shame.
Yes, I think they found it in some sort of, housing estate or something, where you couldn't quite pin.
The culprit. Yeah.
Yes.
What a shame.
But at least it's returned. So we hope the same will happen for the Fiesta. But I think, to me, that was it's quite nice to see social media being used in this way. Obviously not quite as good as a tracker, but still quite helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would hope, James Batchelor, if any, your classic MG is ever stolen from its very secure garage, that the same thing would happen.
Well, no, I think I'm sure it would, but I think what it just goes to show is that nothing, and it sounds such a stupid thing to say, I know, but nothing really is safe, is it? It doesn't matter what car you have. There are opportunist people all around, and I say opportunist, I mean this clearly wasn't an opportunist theft, was it? I mean, it was in a covered trailer in a pub car park. You know, it's not like the car was parked up at the side of the street and it was easy to break into. I mean, this was somebody presumably with another trailer. They must have put it on another trailer. You would assume.
Well, I think they took the whole trailer. So they turned up.
Of course,
Mike Brewer himself told us, there was footage of this white Mercedes Sprinter turning up. And
yeah, but that's not an opportunist thing. That is somebody that there's a bit of planning has gone into that, isn't there? So
possibly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just awful, and you would hope that with the might of Wheeler Dealers, and Mike Brewer tweeting about it and putting stuff on Instagram, the car will be found. But you just never know.
I'm gonna say, great publicity for the Wheeler Dealer program, though. This will be everywhere, and be interesting to see, even if they find it or not. I think Mike Brewer will be inside a little bit happy with what's happening, with what they'll be able to do with this story. Sorry, happy is not the right word, Mike, if you listen to this, but happy is definitely not the right word there. But yes, I'm sure there'll be lots of publicity for the show on it.
Yeah.
Over to Batch.
Shall I move on? Well, it's sort of a bit of a boring thing to talk about, I'm afraid. But it did catch my eye this week, and it was the ex-boss of Audi has been fined and handed a suspended jail sentence. And of course, this is Dieselgate again, and Rupert Stadler. I remember
good pronunciation there.
I remember interviewing him years ago when, and this is the thing, isn't it? It doesn't seem that long ago when VW Group were just, you know, they were, and the key German executives, they were like gods in the industry. And then all of a sudden it's been a very quick fall from grace for these German executives. And
not quite to Carlos Ghosn level, but yeah.
Not quite at the Carlos Ghosn level. And I mean, that story in itself never fails to not amuse me. That's the wrong word, but the someone's going to make a film out of the
Carlos you're talking about, or Dieselgate.
We are making a film out of it. I think it's
it doesn't surprise me. But just going back to this, and Rupert Stadler is the latest man to punish, that's the correct word for this. And the thing about this is that it's just yet again, it's just the whole thing of Dieselgate is just brought to the top of the news agenda again, yep. Isn't it? And I do feel as though it just adds more fuel to the fire, doesn't it? You know, it seems a number of adverts on TV about people claiming about being missold buying a diesel. I mean, it just seems to be growing and growing and growing, doesn't it? And we get so many press releases every single week about there's another lawsuit against another car manufacturer. And all of this is just sort of snowballing, isn't it? And you know, funnily enough, the sales of diesels are down, aren't they, all of the time? And it's just amazing how this Dieselgate story and this purge on diesels is just getting worse and worse and worse. And that's the latest thing that's been affected this week. So yeah, that caught my eye.
I don't know if there's a bit of resurgence. Well, okay, there's not a resurgence towards diesel. New diesel sales are down consistently, aren't they? Continue to drop. But then how much of that is because it's being removed day by day from various car ranges?
Of course, that's the answer.
I don't know if it's, you know, for all the people appearing on the Tonight program on ITV going, oh well, I bought this Alhambra because I thought it was ecological because it says Ecomotive on the back, and now to find this out is a horror. Are they actually that bothered? Or fundamentally, okay, well, there is obviously people are concerned about environmental issues, but I think at this stage they're probably more concerned about how much is it costing to fill up. That's my feeling on that. So I say this as a very much enjoying my new diesel Mazda that Mazda have kindly lent us for a year. I'm kind of amazed by it. I love being in a diesel again. I think it's great. And I think the technology is improving year on year, isn't it? To the point where probably this diesel that I'm driving around is cleaner than most petrols. Certainly most five-year-old petrols.
Batch, but this Dieselgate story, you're right about how long it goes on. I remember part of the Swansway group, I was in Wrexham the week that the whole Dieselgate scandal, for the want of a better word, came out. And a customer actually turned up and called one of the salespeople there, "You're a squirrel killer. You squirrel killers, okay? And I want my money back, all of it in full, okay?" And again, this is the very first week. Squirrel killer, it just always made me smile.
Squirrel killer.
But of course, the customer had something like a 3-litre diesel to a rag or something like that, and he was very concerned about the environment. Or he might have been concerned, thinking he might get the, after driving it for 4 years, all of his money back. But it seems so long ago that happened, and Batch, it's still rumbling on.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Well,
I
feel as though I should just sort of tidy a few loose ends up about Rupert Stadler story, because, you know, it's a court story, so you've just got to be quite precise about it. So he was given a suspended jail sentence for 3 years, and this is the Munich Regional Court, They've given him a 21-month jail sentence, suspended for 3 years, and fined him €1.1 million, which is circa £950,000. He initially tried pinning the blame on engineers, but then he later confessed. So it's just an amazing story, and one that, just like you, Simon, I remember being at Auto Express at the time and being shoved in front of some cameras at the BBC and talking about Dieselgate.
Gosh, and that when was it? How long ago was it? I'm trying to think. When was
2016.
It?
2016. Wow. It was 2016, and yet we're still talking about it in 2023. It's quite extraordinary, really. So that's the latest episode in the Dieselgate saga, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. I will move us on to my last story. Well, actually, I'm going to combine two in one, which is, I've left the kind of the statistical story for the end, which is used car prices and what are they doing this
month.
We've
got the same story, John, but yes.
That's good. So there's sort of two in one here because we get lots of data from lots of different places. I'll talk about the data from CapHBI first. CapHBI have said used car prices have dropped 1.4% in June, but there's definitely no crash coming, which I particularly liked in the video. Darren sort of says he's beginning to feel like Michael Fish in 1987, just before the hurricane arrives, saying there is no crash, there's no hurricane coming. But we will take him on his word, there's no crash coming on used car prices. The interesting one for this month is EV prices have sort of stabilized, for want of a better word, but it's now hybrids that are starting to fall. So we've still got, if we look at the biggest used car price drops, you've still got a handful of electric cars in there, slightly more niche ones like the Kia Soul electric, not many of them on the roads, Seat Mi, Nissan ENV200, Honda E, Golf Hybrid, oh no, it's a hybrid. Yeah, so quite niche EVs leading the EV price drops. But the biggest faller was the Toyota Prius, down 9.6% compared to May, which is quite a drop. Also in there, Golf Hybrid. And I think there's a few others further down out of the top 10 as well. But I'm surprised to see that hybrids have fallen, because my feeling was that hybrids were sort of seen as, well, I suppose that there was a price high for electric cars 6 months ago. And I suppose we had the price high for hybrids, didn't we? But now even that's starting to drop. I think, as far as Darren was concerned, not to misquote him, but he kind of alluded to it being a leveling out back to their natural price point, perhaps. So perhaps they were a bit too highly priced.
Yeah.
Various hybrids. So that's quite interesting. And then the other thing I will talk about is Auto Trader. Similar sort of story, but they've done the annual fallers. Obviously, the Auto Trader data is based on advertised price rather than retail price. Yeah. So their biggest fallers across the year: Tesla Model S down 24%, e-tron, Zoe, Leaf, i3, I-Pace, Taycan, and so on. But in ninth place, Land Rover Defender 90 down 9.5% year on year from June last year to now. So that one surprised me, because I thought, I mean, it's probably, well, we were under no illusion that a year ago, certainly, things like the Defender were massively overpriced in the used market, weren't they? I remember when we shot Car Dealer Power in a JLR dealer, I think that was less than a year ago, actually, there was a 90 V8 there for up for 100. How much was it, Batch? Can you remember? 150,000 or something?
Yeah.
So in a way, not really surprising that those prices have started to fall.
No. Well, the big surprise, so just going back to that CapHPI data, on the flip side, the used car price rises. There are certain things in there which is not surprising. BMW M4 convertible, you know, quite a few sort of sporty cars, you know, especially with the hot weather we've had lately. But it's the number one, isn't it? Which is utterly extraordinary, which going up, prices on average have gone up by 5.1%. It's the Mitsubishi Mirage, which, as we all know, is an utterly, utterly dreadful car.
Yeah.
Yet for some reason, the prices have gone up. And it's just, we've seen it at various points since COVID, haven't we? These weird kind of sort of cars that have had these massive price increases. I mean, the most famous one, of course, was the Vauxhall Zafira, wasn't it? Which, for no apparent reason, was selling hotcakes.
Well, actually, no, I think to credit the Zafira, I think it was because there was a lack of MPVs, wasn't there? MPVs are being phased out, and there's only so many seven-seaters in the world. And to the Zafira's credit, it's very good at A, catching on fire, and B, carrying seven people around in reasonable comfort. So, whereas I'm not sure what you can say about the Mirage, other than it's, no, I haven't got any positives for the Mirage. So I don't know where this has come from and why suddenly everyone's desperate to get into a Mitsubishi Mirage.
Yeah. Yeah. What I took from that, though, is what Dan was saying about the crash is not coming. I hope he's right. He's got the data there to back it up there. And it would appear that way that, yeah, they're coming down, they're softening, but we're not going to have a crash like we had in 08, 09, in my opinion. We can't do. If the number of new cars sold came back so much, it's going to affect the used vehicle park there. So I sincerely hope that he's dead right about the crash is not there. Let's hope he's not Michael Fish. Okay, with his weather report on that one. that was going back a while as well, John.
It was. There is no hurricane. There is no hurricane. Batch, any more from you?
No, that's all my stories this week. Thank you, John.
Lovely. Yeah. Well, that's all of mine as well. So, Simon, are there any stories you think we have missed?
I haven't. There's none there, really. I tell you what, the story that really jumps out for me, and I think a lot of our listeners, a lot of our clients will be interested in, is really what the ASA has done with Toyota and Hyundai. Sorry, I'm pronouncing wrong, Hyundai. Okay. I got to say, that's, we're going to see more and more of that. And it is, it's a tough one, because I see both sides of that argument there, and it's good to see you guys, getting into a bit of confrontation on it. So, I got to say that is, we're going to hear more of that, because I do see both sides of it. I think the manufacturers haven't lied. You can charge it in that time. I also, John, get your point, but you can't find the charger to do it at that time. I think we're going to see more of that. But John, extra points. I think that was your story, Batch. But can we give points to John? Because he picked out that the charger they actually showed in the advert was not a charger. And the ASA, and we'll be looking into that, I'm sure, now.
Absolutely. Unban it and then ban it again. For that.
Yes. Well, we can give extra points to John, but we shan't.
So, right. So, I mean, my next question was going to be, who do you think is the winner? Which you've sort of answered there. Is Batch your winner?
I'm going to go for John, because whilst it was Batch's story, I'm going to go for you, John, because the unique slant on it there, where they advertised the wrong charge as well. I never picked up on that. So, yes.
This is an unprecedented first in the podcast where I've been awarded for somebody else's story.
And that'll be the last time Batch invites me onto the podcast.
Yes, well, it's been lovely having you on, Simon. Hopefully talk to you again in a few years' time.
Love it.
Well, on that note, all that's left for me to say is thank you to Simon for judging today and sharing your insights and wisdom on all things car sales and training. It's been great to have you on.
Perfect. Well, listen, thank you very much. And listen, a shameless plug, the Selling in the Motor Trade podcast, go and have a listen to that, because we've got lots of stories you're talking about. We've got a guest there from OEMs and lots of dealer groups and people who are investors there. Lots of tips and ideas there. So your listeners, if they go and have a listen to that as well. It's different. Yours is about news stories. Ours is all about sharing tips and ideas on how to sell more cars, improve the service, after sales departments, and make more money. So, but listen, I really appreciate being here.
Oh, fantastic. And thank you to Batch as well for competing. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. So make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you're listening on Spotify, don't forget you can swipe up now and vote on who you think won. If you want to check out the stories we mentioned today, you can click the links in the show notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk, where you'll find those and much more news besides. Thanks again. And until next time, goodbye.